That's great.
Okay, I guess we'll get started. I don't have a gavel, so we'll just go without that. The healthcare long-term care workers working group will come to order. I, Paul Coring, Senator, will be chair today. You know, I think what we're going to do is we'll go around again and introduce everybody that's on the working group. And then after that, Dave Giel will give us a review of information from DHS regarding a fiscal note preparation. And then after that, Mr. Giel will discuss the recommendations that he's prepared to the full commission, and then we can have discussion at that point. But I would just start out just a couple comments and just say that just in talking to Representative Fritz here, I think this exercise has been helpful. I don't know that, I guess I'm not sure that anything's going to come of this, but I think it is extremely important that we talk about it, because nothing ever happens if you don't talk about something. And so I think it's important that we talk about this, we come up with some recommendations, and hopefully overall we'll have some recommendations to the 2008 legislative session. So with that, let's start over here on my right and with introductions, and just go around the table, please.
Randy Chun with the House Research Department.
Thanks, Randy.
Mr. Chair, I'm Mark McAfee with AFSCME. Tom Burke could not be here today, so I'm replacing him just for this meeting. Thank you.
Okay.
Jane Peltieri, Human Resources Director for Merrick, Inc.
I'm Sally Erickson from La Falls DAC in Thief River Falls, Minnesota.
Representative Patty Fritz from District 26B.
Okay. Senator Paul Coring from Senate District 12 up in Brainerd and Little Falls area.
Barb Brand from the Minnesota Home Care Association.
Bill Spartz, Nursing Home Representative for UFCW Local 653.
Heidi Holstey with AARP.
Bruce Nelson with ARM.
Lori Meyer with the Minnesota Health and Housing Alliance.
David Giel from Senate Research.
I want to thank everybody for showing up today. So I guess from there we'll just move on to Mr. Giel. If you want to, you can just sit right there and give us a review, if you could, on information that you've received. And on our agenda here, I think the first thing would be the review of DHS regarding the fiscal note, if that'd be okay.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, members. I think the fiscal note request officially went to the department 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I had an initial conversation with somebody down there who said they were going to have trouble doing the fiscal note and that I should contact the Department of Health or the Department of Commerce. So I talked to somebody in the health department who said, I think DHS can do it. They may not be able to do it exactly to the, to the penny, but making some assumptions, they could probably do it. So Health and DHS got in contact with each other, and DHS called me back and said, well, based on this conversation, that DHS was going to attempt to do a fiscal note. And that's the last I heard of it until I got an email. Oh, I did have a conversation late last week about that they were not going to do a fiscal note, and I got an email this morning that I think you all have in your packets. It's from Steve Barté, the lobbyist for DHS, and this is their official confirmation that they're not going to be able to do a fiscal note on our request, and basically indicating that this kind of work would require an insurance actuary and would also require some input from the health plans and perhaps commerce and health. And George Hoffman, their person who does their fiscal notes, is predicting that this would be quite expensive and time-consuming, and pointing out the several types of data that would be needed, and that DHS would become involved after the insurance product is priced. DHS could then estimate what kind of a rate increase the providers would need to be given so that they could buy that insurance product for their employees. And so that's where we stand. There is a person from DHS here if you want to ask her any questions, Sue Bankin. But We have not made any progress on her getting a fiscal note to date.
Sue, if you wouldn't mind stepping up there, I'd appreciate it. Can you explain for the benefit of a dairy farmer, what would we have to, what would the working group or the Healthcare Access Commission need to do to move the process forward, talk to Blue Cross Blue Shield? Is that correct then?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, there are two parts to this that made doing a fiscal note difficult. The one that Mr. Gill described that would require working with an insurance actuary to determine what kind of product would be offered and then what the cost would be for product offered to long-term care workers would be part of that. The other part is having the information about for the long-term care employers, which long-term care agencies you mean exactly? Would it be the list of all of the facility-based and home and community-based services that receive cost of living adjustments? Would it be confined to facilities or some subset of providers? And then we would need to know how many employees they have who are full-time, how many are part-time, and then we'd need to know, because the request asked for creating some sort of a maintenance of effort, so employers that already invest some of their funding toward providing health insurance, we would need to know how the insurance they offer compares to the insurance that would be these products that would be developed, in order to know, you know, is it comparable? Is it less? We saw in the survey that was that was conducted that a lot of the employers offered insurance, but there wasn't always take-up, and then there was some speculation. I think Mr. Gill had I think you had raised that it could be because it either the co-pays or the deductibles may be high or something like that. So while it was interesting to read the information that was collected in the survey, it wasn't enough information for the department to be able to make those kind of assumptions. We could have made assumptions, but I don't know that that would be useful for you. You would want to be able to have information that you can then adjust and look at how to refine it in different ways. So what you would want is more of a significant data collection effort to get that kind of information, and then the department could do something with that. And the combination of making some assumptions about what the product would look like and then making some significant assumptions about how many people we were talking about, we would want to have better information.
So it sounds to me like it's almost too broad for the department to look at, and you're saying that we need to kind of narrow it down to specifics of what we really want. And when you say product, you mean what benefits are going to be offered in that benefit set. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. In the request that we received, we were given an idea of three different levels of insurance that would be offered. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, one of them was a Minnesota Care-like, and one was like the state employees receive, and I do not recall what the third one was. And that would be helpful to first be really clear what the product would be, and to have that idea of what the cost would be for that population. But then the second piece would be to really understand how many people were which kind of long-term care providers we were talking about, and how to handle that maintenance of effort. So some more discussion would be needed to come up with what the data would be that would need to be collected.
Any questions, Representative Fritz?
No, I think I pretty much get it. But, you know, this is a process, and we've just begun the process, so I'm hoping that in time that we are able to bring and work on that data and and nail those numbers down and go forward. So I hope we see you again soon. Any questions from anyone else?
If no questions from anybody else, thanks for being here. Really appreciate it. Mr. Giel, if you want to move forward then on what you have down as far as to discuss recommendations, if you want to go over that, I would be much appreciated.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The member should also have a handout that has our working group name at the top and is a draft of our report to the full commission, which will be delivered tomorrow morning. And this is an opportunity for the members who have seen this already, I believe, to make any suggestions that they want to for changes in this. I could run through it sort of paragraph by paragraph. And
I'd like to have you run through that paragraph by paragraph, if you would, Mr. Giel.
Should we ask people to stop me as I go for suggestions or wait till the end? Or
why don't we just have you run through it, and then if the working group would maybe just put a check by something that you might have a question about, and then after Mr. Giel runs through the whole thing, we can go back to that specific area if you have questions. And this is a time when we really want your input. We as legislators want the working group's input. So go ahead.
Okay. I should point out that this will be reformatted slightly to fit in with the format we got from the full commission, but it'll be this will be the language once we agree to it that will go to the full commission. We start out with the recommendation, which was to provide a rate increase to long-term care employers dedicated to the purchase of employee health insurance, and point out that the majority of these rate increases would be paid by the medical assistance program, and one half of the MA payments would be made by the federal government. To qualify for reimbursement, the insurance product would have to meet some minimum criteria that we discuss a little bit further down, and point out that we asked for a fiscal note on three insurance options. And number one is the benefit package that's provided to state employees. Second option would be the Minnesota Care benefit package. Point out that one shortcoming of that package is the $10,000 limit on hospital coverage for some adult enrollees. And then the third option would be some kind of average private market health insurance product, but with a deductible limited to $100 per person. And I have some cost estimates in here that what this insurance would cost that I got from the Commerce Department. And then go on to say that the premium cost sharing, the waiting periods for eligibility, and some of the other parameters under any of these three options would be identical to the state employees plan. Full-time employees would pay 0% of the individual premium and 15% of the dependent premium. Part-timers would pay a higher percentage based on a sliding fee scale according to the number of hours that they work. And part-timers would have to work at least 32 hours per pay period to be eligible, and the waiting period for new employees would be 35 days. Then we go on to a problem statement, pretty much taken from the presentations that we had before the work group. Point out that the industry has three features that curtail insurance coverage. First of all, you have a lot of low-paid workers who simply can't afford the insurance, have many part-timers who are not working enough hours to qualify, and have a high turnover so that at any one time a large number of people are waiting to qualify for coverage. We review the data sources that we looked at, the 2002 report from the Department of Health on employer-sponsored health insurance in the long-term care industry that concluded that a large percentage of employers offer insurance, but a relatively small percentage actually take it up. And we also conducted a non-scientific survey, staff of the work group along with the provider representatives, and in September of this year came to pretty similar conclusions. And then the one question that we couldn't answer from those resources was the actual number of uninsured employees. And so Holly Roden, senior field researcher at SEIU, presented an analysis that she did on that specific topic. She came up with somewhat different data than the other two sources, and her conclusion that was about 9% of long-term care employees are uninsured versus about 10.8% of other workers. She did find substantial differences in coverage between long-term care management employees and other long-term care workers. Percentage of the other workers that was uninsured was quite a bit higher than for management. And just concluded that given these different data sources, it's difficult to reconcile this data, but it's clear that a significant percentage of long-term care workers are uninsured, and the realities of the industry, low pay, part-time work, high turnover, make it unlikely that the remaining uninsured workers will be able to obtain employer-based coverage without some sort of state intervention. Then we looked at past efforts at solutions. This is something the full commission asked for. Point out that the recent cost of living increases required that a substantial percentage be used for wages and benefits, including health care benefits. But given the rapid increase in health care costs in recent years, these COLAs have probably not done much more than help employers pay their ever-increasing premiums. And in addition to that effort, there's been legislation in recent years that would have expanded Minnesota care eligibility to include more long-term care workers, but that was not successful. Then finally, we've got some background information on the work group process. The charge to the work group was very specific, and we quickly settled on this approach of a provider rate increase. Point out that there's some unresolved issues, perhaps more than I knew when I put this together, but one thorny issue is that employers currently make widely different investments in health insurance versus other facility needs, and so that's going to be a fairness issue that we're going to have to wrestle with. And a larger issue, of course, is controlling overall health insurance cost growth, and we hope that the full commission will be addressing that issue. And another issue that we didn't address but probably needs to be discussed down the road is whether or not a pooling mechanism would help with the specific problem in the long-term care industry.
What did you say? What would help?
A pooling mechanism. Okay. There was some discussion of that at one of our work group meetings. So that's the draft recommendation that I've prepared.
Okay. Has all the people on the working group, have you had a chance to review this beforehand, or is this the first time you've seen it? I think we emailed it out, didn't we? Okay. Any questions or comments?
I'm just going to throw a concern out there that one of the difficulties of measuring the health insurance piece is the different plans out there, and there are certainly a large group of plans for both long-term care employees and management groups, and I'm just wondering if there's any recommendation of getting a some type of measuring group, if there's a recommendation for that measuring group of what we need to do to address that disparity between all those.
I'm not quite sure I understand. Are you talking about the fact that there would be different costs at each facility because they are purchasing different plans, or?
Correct.
Okay, well, we do point out that that's an issue that has to be addressed, the fairness issue of some employers have made that a priority.
And I understand that. Is there something that we could do to measure? Is there a core group of, 30 facilities? You know, is there something that you could recommend that we would look at as a group? Look at a number of facilities to try and get some type of number for the fiscal note, or is that just too broad of a problem?
Well, I think we'll have to have some discussions with DHS to find out exactly what they need and what we can do, or who can do this research to get them the information they need to do a fiscal note. I guess I would think that after those discussions, we might have to come back to the industry to see if they can provide that kind of data. I don't know offhand how much of a research project that would be to to get that specific data from a sample of the industry.
Thank you. One other question I would ask the group. It appears that there is a certain degree of uninsured in the nursing homes, and I'm wondering if that would be more of our task, is to address those that are absolutely uninsured as opposed to those who are having and are getting insurance now and, like many others, paying the high premiums of co-pays and those kinds of things, or are we just trying to address insurance overall?
Well, it's whatever the will of the working group is. It isn't. I mean, you know, we as legislators are asking for your input. That's why we want you on the working group. So I guess I'd like to hear from the working group. But I guess to me, it goes, and I've said this before. You know, if you want to have, and I think we all want to have stability at our nursing homes. And what I mean by that is, the more rapid turnover you have of employees, I think that the care of the residents goes down. And so I think what in my mind what we're trying to do is by providing a benefit package, hopefully that person will want to stay there, and hopefully that will be their career. So then in them having that be their career, it helps stabilize the facility so that you don't have a lot of turnover and you don't have a lot of new people, so that I think it just adds, it helps the facility overall, because one of the things that when they're that they're measured by is employee turnover. That's one of the things they're measured by. So I guess in my mind, you know, rather than having somebody make a decision on whether or not they're going to work at Woodland Good Samaritan Home or to go work at Walmart, I'd rather have that person be able to stay at Woodland Good Samaritan. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would prefer looking at insurance overall. There have been, you're talking about nursing homes, there's also group homes, many, many, many of them across the state with thousands of workers. And many of the, not only management folks in group homes, but or those companies, but the direct support professionals themselves, as COLAs have come down over the years, have made the decision as they participate in how we're going to do the compensation, have made the decision to use as much as they can for health insurance. That's an economic and family priority for them. So if we would be penalizing, in other words, I think those folks who have sacrificed maybe something in wages to have health insurance, and we should move ahead and try to solve the overall problem. And if we're doing that, you know, I'm hoping that eventually, and I do hope this does move forward, and we're all disappointed that we're kind of stuck here today. But as we move forward, that we can, as part of a cost containment strategy, being able to count then more dollars coming from the federal government to reduce our overall expenditure to expand health insurance for folks. So that would be my two cents anyway. That makes sense.
A question: as I read the first paragraph of the recommendation, it strikes me there's two different ways we could go, and I'm not clear. One way you could read this is that what we're here to do is to create an overall system that creates a health insurance product or mechanism for all long-term care employees to participate in. And I sympathize with the department and others who've struggled with gathering the data so we can cost out what that might be. Given that we don't have the access to the data, is there another opportunity for us to take a more incremental approach, learn from some mechanisms that we have created in other areas, for example, the scholarship program or grants for technology or electronic health records, where we're not looking for a whole systems change, but some incremental improvement or access that hopefully will build over time. That certainly isn't something we'd have to generally fiscal note on the front end, but could, you know, put some limitations on how far and fast we grow as we move forward. I look at, just to use a nursing facility example that was expanded to home and community-based services, is a scholarship program. You know, quarter per diem add-on that was dedicated to scholarships that facilities either used or did not use, and then it became a floating cost-based mechanism. The more health insurance you are providing to your employees, the higher that adjustment goes. If you choose not to provide your employees with health, with, in this case, scholarships, then that quarter would go away. It seems to me that if we can't do the whole thing right now, maybe we can look at some incremental approaches. I'd encourage us to not forget about that.
You know, and I think that's a good suggestion, because I think when we finally do hone this down, and I just personally believe when we get a fiscal note, I think the fiscal note is going to be huge. And, you know, I just talked to Ward Innes today, and, you know, we're not going to know what the how the revenues are coming into the state of Minnesota, but I will tell you that I can't speak for anybody else's district, but I got to tell you that I think we're headed for some tough times, and that means that revenues are not going to be coming in, and so we're not going to have the money to pay for this. And so I understand what you're saying. I mean, you know, if we can't do that, and I've said this before, is, you know, better to come away with a half a loaf than a whole loaf, or no loaf at all. So, yeah, well said.
I agree with Lori. I like Lori saying that. Can you say that louder, Heidi? It doesn't happen often enough.
I agree with Lori Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I was just thinking that along those lines as well, if there would be some way that we could move towards making some sort of a product accessible to people, whether it's Minnesota Care or not, at a reasonable rate. And I'll just use our program as an example. We are willing to provide $300 worth of support to our people per month for their health insurance. Our policy just went up to $576 a month, and so I had three people drop off of it because they can't afford to make up that difference. So for those of us who are willing, excuse me, to provide that, it would certainly make it more accessible to our employees if we were able to get into one of these groups where purchasing it would be more reasonable for our employees. If there's any way that we could get, and I, as another example, one of the questions on the application for Minnesota Care is, does your employer provide health insurance? And if the answer is yes, do they pay half of it? Well, if we pay $300 and our policy is $576, we don't pay half. Or we pay more than half, excuse me. And so that, you know, it's like, they're so close to being eligible, but they're not. But, and I guess I just, I think that maybe the formula or the application process for Minnesota Care could even be looked at to see if, you know, if there's, you know, if you're really interested in long-term care workers, you know, could there be a section on there, are you employed in one of these? And if so, continue with, you know, or, you know, with certain questions or whatever, to open up the eligibility there. Mm-hmm. I think the employers would probably still support their employees in helping to pay those premiums, but just to get something available to them that is within their range. The coverage that we're purchasing for almost $600 a month is like a $1,500 deductible policy. Mm-hmm. It's horrible. And part of the reason for that is because all of my healthy employees have dropped off of it. And the reason it's so high is because only those that are absolutely cannot drop that insurance are on it right now.
So, Mr. Giel, if, and this probably isn't the way that I think the commission wants to go, but let's say, you know, I know we talked, the last few years we talked about, there was a talk about a small employer plan where employers of 50 employees or less could, if they had not been providing health care insurance to their employees within the last year, they could buy into Minnesota Care, and the employer would pay half and the employee would pay the other half. But if we, let's say we did hypothetically something like that, then we wouldn't be getting half the money from the federal government. Is that correct, or is that kind of what the commission was kind of looking for, is to have a kind of a cost sharing type deal?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's correct. That's why they our direction was to go in that direction. But I think there is some medical assistance reimbursement for certain Minnesota Care expenditures. I don't know offhand mm-hmm. if that's for any adults or if it's just for children. But we could look into that. We could also suggest, if there wouldn't be any medical assistance money in that route, we could suggest that as a incremental step along with the proposal that Ms. Meyer suggested. So we could say this is our recommendation, but as an incremental step before we get to that level, which will probably be expensive, we could have some other short-term solutions.
And I would just also say to the working group and everybody listening that, you know, I think for us tying a lot of our hopes and dreams on receiving money from the federal government, I would point out that we all pay into the federal government. I would point out the fact that the federal government is now over $9 trillion in debt. And so, you know, long term, I see some of these things drying up long term. And so I, for one, would like to see us be looking more inward rather than outward for money and trying to figure out how we're going to pay for things here, because I just don't know how we can continue to fund some of the things that we're funding on the federal level. So it's just a Heidi.
Mr. Chair, one of the issues that has come up every year on this topic, whether it's asking for Minnesota Care to buy into Minnesota Care, or the idea that's being talked about here, is the issue of not being able to measure what population we're talking about. So another incremental step that we could possibly recommend, in case this wouldn't move forward as quickly as we'd like it, is to actually get that measurement, so that maybe one day when there is a lot of extra money around, or there are other ideas that come to the table, we'd at least be able to start measuring and knowing what population we're talking about.
I guess I don't follow what you're saying.
One of the issues that DHS has continually in putting together a fiscal note is we don't know if we're talking how many people are part-time. We don't know if we're talking about nursing home employees only, and how many of them are there, how many of them are full-time, how many are there part-time. So my suggestion or recommendation would be to somehow identify a system of collecting that data.
And Mr. Chair, I wanted to just add that from the survey that we did to the Home Care Association, we know that a lot of our providers would be called small businesses. And they said, and I don't have enough information to give the full background, but they said that they didn't have enough employees to qualify for certain types of health insurance. And the other piece is that because they were so small, if any one of the people that they had covered had a significant illness, or if any of their dependents had a significant illness, their rates would just go up astronomically. So that's why I think that whatever we do, if we can look at a pooling mechanism like Dave mentioned, that would be helpful to kind of stabilize the increase per year for the small employer, that would be a great help, I think, as far as keeping people covered and making it affordable.
Sir.
Mr. Chair, first of all, this is a really small point, but on this working group recommendation at the top of the third paragraph, it talks about the state benefit package. I know it's common in the insurance industry to talk about a rich package, but I would suggest that we strike rich and put and substitute generous. But also I would add that I think some very good comments have been made by the other members here. Obvious, I'd say, first of all, you from our standpoint, one would definitely want to look at the entire – look at the industry and look at insurance for all and how it's provided. I mean, the goal, obviously – the first thing we have to recognize is really for many that happen to work in the industry, you're talking about working poor or maybe a step up from there. So we all agree that, you know, compensation – is an issue, and it becomes a cost, you know, if we don't address it somehow. Many of these people are put over onto other public costs or programs. Somehow, since we don't, we need, obviously, to, as others have pointed out, we need to get a handle on who we're really aiming at or targeting in on here. So, however it might be designed or put forward, as Heidi was talking about, a measurement, whether that would be a directive to, you know, DHS or DHS working in conjunction with health or commerce or whomever can provide the information. If we don't know at this point how many people are uninsured or who gets what benefit. Also, I think once you do get a package, or if you put together a pooler package, one would probably, as is pointed out somewhere in this report here, recognize if we've had employers. Do we have any employers right now that provide any type of a generous benefit package? And if they do, whether they did it out of the goodness of their hearts or whether there was union negotiations or whatever caused it, somehow we would want to probably reward that. When we look at rating nursing homes and we say that if they're if they have good staff retention or the ratio of staff to the to the residents, that type of thing, somehow you want to reward people and not just leverage the federal government, but leverage what the private sector through these homes may be doing. How do we reward people to do the right thing to carry it forward? So, you know, backing up here, I think overall goal is to get everybody insured by 2011, is it not? So therefore, how do we move forward? So if we get to 2011, everybody who happens to be working in a long-term care facility or program has insurance at the same time, we're able to, you know, the industry and the employees, for their part, are able to truly afford to participate. So that, whether that's a pool or whatever, but you've got to really have that solid information. Otherwise, of course, if we get, as the chair, as you just pointed out, if we get in a situation here, we have to make tough budget decisions, then this stuff can fall off the map, you know, quickly. So I don't know if some type of a very specific, you know, if you did a, if you do any kind of a study that has any actuarial stuff, it's going to have its own fiscal note. So maybe that's what's needed, is to define a little more sharply here, with the pointing out that clearly the goal is to move forward to improve and have coverage, you know, for all, and to leverage the public resource, you know, where we can. I see nothing wrong with leveraging, after all, the federal government, because medical assistance pays, what is it, two-thirds about? In these homes, you have some private pay. We're already using it, so it's a question of where the money goes. Well, I'll stop. Thank you.
One thing I'd like to comment on is we talk about the word generous here, and we all have to be on the same page on exactly what does that mean. Does that mean a really small co-pays, no deductible, but your premiums are extreme? And your staff are paying for a lot of those premiums, or is it low premiums, but again, then you've got high deductibles, that sort of thing. So you kind of have to operationally define exactly what that generous phrase means here. I was intrigued, too, with the comments regarding kind of that similar to the scholarship program. And one thing about the scholarship program that may apply to this, too, is how it focuses on the workers. And management, according to our studies here, they're doing okay with the coverage here. So that would be certainly one way that we'd ensure that the money is going towards the workers as opposed to subsidizing any sort of management type of benefit plan, too. So,
this is a complicated issue.
Yeah. Let me, if I may, Chair, add another complication. Or just a clarification, is there a limitation that the Healthcare Access Commission will have in terms of the funding source? I'm starting to feel a bit defeated as far as the direction of the data and available general funds, but has there been any discussion at the full commission level that there might be some alternative sources of funding available that we might tap into? Just throwing out there, the Healthcare Access Fund.
I haven't, David, have you heard any discussion? I haven't heard any discussion about that.
Mr. Chairman,
at the commission level.
I know there's been some discussion of savings that are going to materialize from some of these recommendations that mm-hmm. could be reinvested, but I don't know how concrete any of that is at this point, but that's certainly a goal.
I think it's just kind of a moving sidewalk yet. I think we're all just trying to, you know, the last 4 years, Healthcare Access Commission never even met because they had the Republican House and the Democratic Senate, and they didn't agree on getting together. And so now we're finally getting together, and I think we're all good, well-intentioned and trying to figure out with some recommendations for 2008 legislative session. So, this is this summer and this fall has been the most I've ever been down here in meetings and so on and so forth, and so it's I think it's a good thing. I think it's to come up with some recommendations, and then the question is how are we going to pay for it? I'm extremely concerned about the economy, and when the economy takes a nosedive, people aren't obviously having that money to spend, and then in turn the revenues are not coming into the state of Minnesota, and so I'm concerned about the, don't want to sound pessimistic, but I'm just cautious, the revenues aren't coming in, and we could come into the 2008 legislative session and be in a deficit and have to make some adjustments, and so, but if there is revenues, I think we can expand on what we want. What I think the Healthcare Access Commission wants to do is make sure that every single Minnesotan has some kind of healthcare coverage, so they're not accessing their healthcare coverage at the emergency room. Like I think people, I don't think, I know they are, at least in talking to the hospitals in my district, people are still coming in and on a regular basis and accessing their health care at the emergency room. And it's another thing we need to look at is, without the working poor having any access to dental care, they're accessing the emergency room with an abscess tooth, because they don't have the coverage for dental. And so to me, that's just not right. So, yes, sir.
Yep. Mr. Chair, I wonder if we could perhaps build on what Lori was talking about in terms of incremental or pilot or a certain group, and what Heidi's been talking about in terms of getting the baseline data we need. And what I would suggest is that we work with you, Mr. Chair, and you, Representative Fritz, and maybe putting together something that we can, realizing the, you know, this isn't a funding session, and I've been reading the same stuff you've been reading, and it's kind of, it's troublesome,
concerning,
to say the least, yeah. Yes. But, you know, I'd hate to just stop here and
right.
and not try to move forward. You know, as you relook at the trend lines of COLAs and rate changes the last 6 years versus inflation, and then we look at, you know, trended out just the averages for another 6 years, our people are going to be in serious economic trouble, and it's just not sustainable. And if we can do something around health care, that would be significant. So if you two would be willing, I'd certainly be
absolutely
eager to work with you and see if we can put something together.
No, and we're not, and I would just point out to the working group that, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm not speaking for you, Representative Fritz, but we're not done today. This, as far as I'm concerned, we're not done. I think what Representative Fritz and I will do tomorrow is just make a, just kind of do an update, I think, to the full commission on what the working group is doing. And I'm going to talk to Senator Berglund and Representative Huntley. Mm-hmm. You can talk to him and just tell them that it's still a work in progress. You know, there's no, we don't really have any concrete recommendations, but I would like to have us, Mr. Giel is certainly, he's taken notes about what we've been talking about, and so we can continue to figure out in brainstorming what we want to do. So, yeah, exactly.
Yes, I just want to add to that, too, that Ms. Myers, that you're going back to your original comment. I hope we need that in writing, and we'll add that to our recommendations that we bring to the full committee tomorrow. And speaking as a long-term health care worker for many years and working alongside of them, they have been economically challenged for years. So no matter what the November forecast says, it doesn't, it's meaningless to them, because they're all still, those folks are still not receiving dental care or health care. And I have people who I've worked with in Faribault, Minnesota, who live in their car to come to work at St. Lucas. That's outrageous, and they certainly don't have health care. So I feel still very, very good about this task force and all of the work. And I want to thank you, Mr. Giel, for all of this. I think we did a lot of work, and the industry and your ideas and the compassion that you have. And as I go out into the whole state of Minnesota with my nursing home working group, I'm hearing from the CEOs mainly, which is now we're all in the same boat together. But we can't let it sink. And so I do think that that going forward, the recommendations that we have are excellent. I'm very happy with every one of them. I feel like I'm in la-la land. And the recommendations that we've just today come up with from Ms. Myers and Heidi as well, I think going forward, we are going forward. We're going in the right direction. We may not be taking that giant leap, but at least we're taking a step in the right direction. And then I hope that we come back to the Department of Health and ask them to get together with Commerce and get these insurance companies and get the data compiled. And I look forward to doing that work in the near future. I do think that'll be a reality.
We've got some folks in the audience too, and I obviously, being that you're here, we thank you for being here, because we know that you're interested in this too. And so I would just say, if anybody wants to speak to the group, we'd certainly welcome any input that you might have. Anybody?
Excuse me, Senator.
Go ahead.
I would just like to say that there's been a lot of talk about the fact that we don't know what we want yet, but I think that the group has put an awful lot of work into actually defining what we want. There's, you know, all of the logistics of it are outlined in the sixth paragraph as far as eligibility, and so I think that those things are there, so it would be relatively easy, you know, to get some of this data saying these are the people that would be eligible, and then just defining, I guess, that it seems like you've really defined what we want in the options there, you know, that we want a lower deductible, a lower deductible policy with where the employer pays the premium. And so I think that is actually quite defined in moving forward. I think we should, you know, not really move forward saying, well, we don't really know what we can't figure it out because we don't know what we want. I think we do know what we want. I think you've defined that. But the numbers, the only numbers that we have or that we're really looking for is how many people it's going to be and what people are already investing in it. So what are we going to have to do to make it up? So, but I think that I don't think we should go forward stating that we don't know what we want. You know what I mean? Because I think we've defined that pretty clearly here.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we want to state that we don't know what we want, but we might want to state as one of our interim steps that we may need to have an appropriation next year to at least clarify this proposal. Get the actuarial study if, in fact, that's what we need, so that in the future, if there is money to do this, we have a very concrete proposal. I think that's what the discussion that I heard around the table. I think we do.
A study might have to be done, then, you're saying, possibly.
Well, based on the information that we have from DHS, I mean, we can have more conversation about that, but they've had fair amount of conversation, and that's their conclusion. So, and they do the fiscal notes. So they say they need more information. It's pretty hard to tell them that they don't.
Mm-hmm. And I agree that they need more information. And I appreciate I appreciate the work that you do at the department. I do. And I know sometimes we tend to pile a lot on you and expect a lot, and you don't have the resources to provide everything that we ask for. And so I think Mr. Giel stated it right, that there's a possibility that might have to be an appropriation to do a study on this. So any further?
I would support, Mr. Chair, what Dave is saying. And as we talk about baseline data, clearly, at some point, we're going to need some actuarial analysis, mm-hmm. So why not begin doing it?
Well, if no other comments from the working group, it'll be your turn to chair next time. And so I don't think that we... between the both of us, we have a date in mind. I think we both need to talk to our chairs, Senator Berglund and Representative Huntley, and talk to them about this and give an update to the commission, and then we'll be in touch with everybody. I think we need to meet at least a couple more times to figure out where we're at exactly. So does that sound all right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess if there's nobody in the audience that wants to say anything, I guess we'll adjourn for today. And I think what we'll do, too, is I'll have my able legislative assistant be at the meeting tomorrow and maybe take notes. And I don't know if everybody's going to be at the meeting, but if you're not, I'll have him take notes, Ken Schwecker, take notes, and then we'll email out how things went at the full commission meeting, if that'd be acceptable. Yes?
Question, will there be action taken at the commission meeting, or is this just an update?
Well, you know what? I'm thinking that the commission would like to have this be the, and tell me if I'm wrong, Mr. Giel, I think they'd like to have this be the final recommendation, but I'm just sorry to say that it isn't going to be the final recommendation because we don't have everything
put together yet. And so I'm just going to tell them that it's an update. And then what we might have to work, that the Healthcare Access Commission is going to meet many, many more times before the first of the year. So am I right, Mr. Gaylor?
Mr. Chairman, I think the purpose of the meeting tomorrow, as was the case last week, is for the work groups to report their recommendations to the full commission. Mm-hmm. Whether they can be revised in the future, I don't know.
Yeah, and that's why I said that I think both Representative Fritz and myself need to talk to Senator Berglund and Representative Huntley and tell them where we're at and see which direction they want to go.
Mr. Chair, I was at the Legislative Commission last week, and the groups that reported, they didn't have, like we have, in my mind, a recommendation, and most of the groups didn't have exact specific, you know, legislation written about how they're going to do it.
Exactly.
So I think that's a fair representation that we're bringing to them mm-hmm. as well.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess I never envisioned the Healthcare Access Commission having me bringing the jackets ready to introduce. I never envisioned it as that. So I think this is just recommendations. But I still feel like we still need to talk some more. And like I said, I need to talk to Senator Berglund. And you need to talk to Representative Huntley, and then we'll figure out what they want to do because we're reporting to them. So, nobody else.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would hope besides the written report that's handed out today that you would at least orally, if it isn't demanded into this report. Talk about the nature of the discussion today, that we got this late information after a 2 or 3 week request,
right?
About the note of the fiscal note, and mm-hmm. and that the fact is that, you know, we acknowledge we may need additional information, and that we may be paring down, have a specific request for a study. And then perhaps after the next time this group meets, you would be forthcoming. I would also note, Mr. Chair, that, you know, the restructure of the healthcare system through Identified Savings Group, which is co-chaired by Thiessen and Representative Thiessen and Senator Berglund, is meeting at 1 o'clock tomorrow. So apparently that group doesn't regard their work as done.
Exactly.
So, right. But I think, once again, if you so that we look, because it is true around the table. I mean, people, this is a very serious business for the industry and for those that represent the employees. It's been an ongoing struggle, I think, to get more money into the system. And you folks, among others, have, you know, carried or co-sponsored legislation to help provide rate increases. This is within the context of this overall insurance discussion reform. This is a very important segment of the economy to, you know, to focus on. So I think just so that the commission as a whole knows that the group is, you know, very responsibly responding to the current state here. We need more information, okay? Then the group will probably turn around and be asking for a study specifically to be funded to provide that information. And I think given the fact that even if we head into deficit, the governor is likely to come in with a recommendation on this area or that, I see no reason why the group can't do that. Mm-hmm. It may be the kind of activity that actually would it may save the state in the long run, and also given the fact that two-thirds of the economy is consumer-driven, and given the fact that every dollar that you put into these working poor and the next step up flows back out in the economy, It's probably money well spent. So it just hopefully it won't cost an arm and a leg to provide that study of what needs to be done. So, okay.
And I would just also say that in saying that, you know, when I first got here in 2003, one of the first things, and I'm sure some of you have heard this before, but you're going to hear it again, I had a young dairy farmer come to me. Oh, it was about February of 2003, and he had Minnesota Care, and he had three children, all under the age of 18. So he had Minnesota Care, and his kids had Minnesota Care. And when it came up in 2002 for renewal, one of the things that Minnesota Care for eligibility, what they would do is they'd add, for a farmer, they would add back the depreciation. And if I recall correctly, his income was, on his income taxes, was like $14,800 and some odd dollars. And then he had about $30,000 worth of depreciation. And Minnesota, they would add that back in and add those two together. And then it made him ineligible for Minnesota Care. So all of a sudden, I had a dad and three minor children that didn't have any health care coverage at all. And so I introduced legislation to get rid of the add-back portion of depreciation. Well, I'm happy to say that I was successful in that, but it took 5 years to do it. I didn't get that done until this last legislative session. So I would just remind members that if we think that we're going to fix this in February of 2008, I wouldn't get too excited about that. This might take a while. And so, like I said, it's good that we talk about it. And, you know, I mean, we might have to fund a study next legislative session. And then in 2009, when it's the budget year, we might be ready to move on something. So, anyway. Any further comments? If no further comments, we'll adjourn for today. And I appreciate you for your participation. And have a good day. Mm-hmm. Thank you.